Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Time. Joining me today is Wario Will.
Oh boy, what a week, boys. What a week. After all these news and that many tournaments in the during the weekend, I'm just gonna say, we can finally get onto the real topic. Unicorns versus Narwhals. Now, how is that going to argue
with Will, remember, I muted you last week, and I know I can do it now, so don't make me mute you. And I would like to say that E3 actually saved me this week, because I've been having kind of a terrible week after I got back from my con, but that's hope for another time. Also here is Tellius Tyler.
I really wanted to queue up the Spiral Mountain music, the remix, but I don't think I could pull it off as well as Will did. But they did it. Oh my gosh. This is the greatest.
They did it.
That was the greatest moment of my life. It was top five.
We're going to be talking about that, of course. And because this is a special episode, we have brought back one of our favorite co-hosts, Andross Alex, everybody.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Welcome to the post-Banjo era here. starting now. Come fall, we are now in the post-Banjo era, and it feels like a dream. Still riding the cloud.
Yeah. I'm sure Tyler's watched that trailer like a million times.
Oh, I have. I have. I got it at work today. I listened to an extended version of the Spiral Mountain song for like a half hour. It was awesome. It was the highlight of my day.
I believe it. Well, yes. E3 has officially come and gone, which makes me infinitely sad, but Tuesday and even Wednesday with the Treehouse sessions really gave Nintendo fans a very, very bright future to look forward to. And yes, that means stuff beyond Banjo-Kazooie. I know it's hard to picture, but there was other stuff announced aside from Banjo-Kazooie. We had to write down a list because we kind of forgot, but hey, we're ready for you, all right? So let's just get right into some Direct Talk. Now we're going to do it a little bit differently here tonight, because usually we would just go right from the beginning of the Direct to go right to the end of the Direct, which we're going to kind of do, but instead we're going to start off with each of us talking about our thoughts and feelings on the Direct and the Treehouse sessions overall. And I'm going to start, because I'm going to admit I had a lot of expectations for Nintendo coming in this year, because we knew a lot of games were going to be coming out. We knew only a few of their release dates, with Pokemon being the main one, which, can I just say, I'm glad I was right and about how the Pokemon Direct freed up time for this Direct. All right, because we were talking about that last week. But, yeah, the Pokemon Direct, we know when Pokemon's coming out, and we knew where certain other things are coming out, but not, like, the big games. But now we basically do, with the exception of one or two. So I'll admit that it kind of started off really slow. Like, that first, 10 minutes, okay? They did the hero trailer, which I really liked. We'll get into that. And then they did, the Bowser introduction, which was adorable. But then, right after those two things, they did, the Dark Crystal game. And that thing, dragged on, 3 minutes, I swear. But then after that, they really started to pick up steam. And then by the end, we were all, jumping and dying twice. We died when Banjo came out, and then we came back to life just in time to see Breath of the Wild 2. And yeah, it was great stuff. So, and then the Treehouse segment. I am in love with the Treehouse segments now. I sadly, because of my own work and certain schedule things, I wasn't able to watch it as in-depth as I did last year, where I couldn't be pried away, as Tyler could relate to. But I got to watch them on YouTube, so I watched, the Astral Chain, I watched Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, I watched Fire Emblem, which we're totally going to be talking about later, and this is why Nintendo wins E3 for me, because unlike certain other companies, they didn't just show trailers, they went in-depth on a singular channel. They didn't just go to random ones where you had to hope you picked the right one. They told you exactly where they would be, they told you exactly what they would be showing, and they did it for 2-3 days straight, and today was Indie Day, which was awesome.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So that's Nintendo's way of showing off the indies. They give them a whole day on the Treehouse. So, now there were faults, and we'll be talking about that later. I did one certain showing of a game, kind of disappointed me a little bit. But overall, I give this a solid A. You know, they showed what 2019 is having. They teased a little of what 2020 is having, including a certain game Will is excited about. And I left smiling and proud to be a Nintendo fanboy. So there you go. Will, how about you?
Well, I while we're on Nintendo podcast, I just gotta have to give props to the other conferences as well, because again, this
no, you don't. You're a Nintendo man. Stay in your lane, bro.
Hang on, but again, you gotta have to give props to the competition as well. So be fair. So of course, like with the internet being as internet, we've got basically a lot of memes. So since Microsoft concerts, we had the first meme: Keanu Reeves going into Cyberpunk, which is pretty dang amazing as it is. Like, it was pretty much the year of Keanu Reeves.
Will, have I ever told you that you're breathtaking?
Aye. And then the second thing we have is I forgot her name again, but yeah, she was from the protege of Shinji Mikami, who did many prior games, including Resident Evil. She introduced the Ghostwire, just basically everybody fell in love with her just because
Ikumi
of her personality.
Ikumi Nakamura.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Like, she was just like adorable.
She was.
Simply put, adorable. And then the third one we have is from Ubisoft is the doggy Bam Bam, which everybody just like, oh, forget it. We don't care. Just show us more of the dog. It's like, yeah, there's that. And then finally, of course, we have Nintendo's big presentation. Of course, Bowser being the last one, which I don't know. It seems everyone definitely had their own little trifectas of like their mascots for their presentation, to give or take. But yeah, aside from like us, not Sony. Yeah, Sony wasn't even there. But Square Enix, because they had that one game as well. Of course, Final Fantasy VII Remake. But steering back to Nintendo side of things, for me, yeah, Nintendo just really, really moved it. Like, as I said, they showed up like in that direct gameplay announcement after announcement, and it's just like they. And with the treehouse, it only just furthers more, like, yeah, this is direct gameplay, not in cuts. Like, it basically gives you the idea of what you're expecting in these games. I mean, of course, for me, like, I was really surprised how they bring out some very old IPs, like Panzer Dragoon.
Oh, my God.
To talk about that. That's a game that everyone says, if you like Star Fox, you will like Panzer Dragoon. It's apparently an on-rail shooter. I've never played it, never watched it. I just heard it, and when I recognized the name, when I saw it, I was like, wow, what a great opportunity to play a game that I never otherwise would have played.
Yeah, ooh. I'm only familiar with it from Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transform. There was a Panzer Dragoon stage in there. And I didn't know what it was when I was watching that trailer live. But yeah, that looked pretty cool.
Personally, for me, I remember it from the days of X-Play when they announced it was like a really cult classic game. Like, that's what I remember. Like,
here's what happened. I'll give you a very loose history so we can get going. So, Panzer Dragoon was on the Sega Saturn, which was obviously, you know, not the best console ever. But the game was good. It was legendary even. But they didn't make a lot of copies of it. And so, when people started talking about it, they couldn't get the game. So it became this like ultimate legend of cult classicness, you know? So, you know, them bringing it back on Switch is literally a chance for a lot of people to play a game that they've only heard rumors and legends and myths of. So,
and then when you look at it, it looks like basically that big dinosaur from the Mario 3D Land ride on the waves.
Yeah.
I was what are we looking at? But it looks awesome. I'm really excited for it.
Right. And so, moving on, of course, and naturally the biggest announcement for me, No More Heroes 3 finally confirmed, which thank you.
I thought about you instantly. I was
cracking up because they were going to have a Smash Ball logo appear. Every time I see No More Heroes, I immediately think, what was all the things I said I would do if they announced Travis Touchdown? And just the fear that they'll actually do it and I will have to follow through on all those promises I made, Will. Terrifying.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and also just a little bit more details like on No More Heroes. Like, apparently, Suda51 confirmed that, yeah, Travis Strikes Again actually did met sales wise to Warrant number 3. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Great to all the fans' news. Yes. So, very happy for that. And yeah, of course, Astral Chain after that. Astral Chain, I really cannot wait for that game this coming August. But yeah, overall. And of course, the Banjo and the Breath of the Wild announcement at the end is just like, I was screaming, honestly, at work, it feel like. I was just trying to hold my scream at work, like, what? Are you serious? It's like, wow, they actually ended up with a Zelda announcement, which is like, that was just, that They gave us what we wanted and added more. That's the reason why I feel like Nintendo just pretty much blew away E3 this year again as well. So, yes. So, no, yeah, wrap it up. All. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, yeah, just to wrap it up, it's like, yeah, that's what Nintendo does so well. They gave us more. They gave us what we wanted and a bit more. That's one thing that's like a very good formula they have done, I think, these past few years. They gave us Metroid Prime 4 back last year, and they just added a bit more with the Smash reveal. So it just feels like, yeah, that's the formula they keep on sticking with. And this year, it worked. So I'm very happy.
I was right there with you at work because this was the first E3 I didn't just stop everything. Like, I wanted to put in a sick day, and I regret that I didn't because I had it on in the background. But like, and my bosses are usually like at their desks, not paying attention. I swear they were swarming my desk at noon, right when the direct was happening, and I couldn't just pull it, like blow out if I had to have it going on in the background. And I thought initially, I was like, well, I mean, that was Banjo. I was so happy for that. Was honestly all I wanted. So I would have been content just from that. And Breath of the Wild 2, I was obviously shocking and fantastic, but I didn't really appreciate just how awesome the direct was until I watched it again when I got home. I think Nintendo, I think I said this last year and probably the year before that, Nintendo has the system down for E3, and I'm just shocked that the other companies haven't followed suit yet. Nintendo's direct packed so many games, I didn't count how many there were, but there were a ton, into a tight 40-minute thing that was just gameplay with a couple little gimmicks mixed in. And I think that's the best way to do it. There was no 15-minute demonstration of somebody who's playing a glitchy game that's not working on stage and awkward dance renditions and all that. Like Keanu Reeves, okay, that was cool for the other company. That worked. But I liked Nintendo's method so much more of here's the announcements, here's the games, and then at our Treehouse segment, you can dive in for a 45-minute look at each of these games. Instead of just a brief little teaser, there's so much meat in those Treehouse segments. But if you're not interested in them, you don't have to watch them. You get what you want from it, and it's concise, and it's quick, and it's amazing. I love the Direct. We'll talk all about the games. But I do want to say I missed Reggie. On the negative side, I did miss Reggie. Doug Bowser was nice. He did not have the Reggie charm. Nobody could. So I'm not holding that against him. I thought he did a really good job. But this presentation did lack a little bit of the eccentricity of other Nintendo Directs, where you've got Reggie and he's like shooting laser beams out of his eyes, and then they're continuing with that fast pace, but broken up with little funny bits. I like the Bowser bit, but they've done that to death at this point, so it wasn't like the all-time greatest bit. But
let's remember that this is his first. This was honestly his first Direct. Like,
no,
he has,
true.
So
yeah,
he'll grow into his personality more, and I like the Bowser bit, especially since he had like the tie.
Yeah.
He was about to do the snap, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is for real. And then like the guy stopped and like, no, let Bowser do the snap.
Throw him a freaking bone.
I felt like they've done better in the past, and it was probably because we've seen all the Bowser stuff on Twitter. Like, just the Nintendo diehards are aware of that. But yeah, I mean, overall, this was a phenomenal E3. They did everything that I wanted. If you listen to the episodes leading up to the show, I was really hoping for a lot of release dates, a lot of gameplay, and I wanted to be sold on what we already knew was coming, and I'm sold.
Alex?
Yeah, so I don't think how anyone could watch that Direct and not see something for them. I feel like, you know, like Tyler said, Banjo was enough for me for the whole Direct. So after watching the Direct with Banjo, because that's all I was looking for with Smash characters, because that's what means the most to me. To start it off with a DLC, first of all, to start off with a Smash DLC character told me that Nintendo listened and knew what a vast majority of their audience was excited for. Not all of it, but at least to get that out of the way so that the rest of the Direct can be focused on. Because that Smash community is really kind of, you know, it kind of takes a lot of breath away from what is really a showcase of all their games.
Right.
And I do really, really love how they gave us a lot of information that wasn't guaranteed. People will say what they will, that there's no gameplay or Breath of the Wild 2 could be years from now, but that wasn't owed to us. That wasn't foreseeable, foreseen as a definite. And the fact that it's got this weird, dark Majora's Mask vibe to it makes me feel like it's going to be far more unique than, separating itself from Breath of the Wild. That was exciting. The Animal Crossing fans got information which they needed with their summoning circles all over Twitter. It's nice to see, these new IPs that are interesting, like Astral Chain looks really interesting to me. I don't care how many times they show me Daemon X Machina, there's nothing that's going to make me play that. And
That's fair.
I will say, though, I come to this podcast now having played 66 hours of Fire Emblem Awakening, and I did this in preparation within the last month, within the preparation for this game. I'm so hyped on it, and I will say that overall I was disappointed in the trailer within the Direct. Not because I didn't like it, but because the lack of gameplay. I was watching it with my a friend of mine, and he was, getting into games. He just bought a Switch. He hasn't played a Nintendo console since probably the GameCube. And now he's trying to get into Fire Emblem, or thought maybe he would buy it. He sees that trailer and it just looks like unidentifiable anime with none of the characters he knows from Smash Brothers. And he's like, I don't even know what this is trying to get at. The treehouse cleared that up beautifully, yes. And I'm hyped more than ever. But it wasn't I felt like it definitely catered maybe to Fire Emblem's fan base. I didn't think it was inherently bad at all, but it did kind of make me think, I don't know who's going to go out on a limb and try this.
So in after that trailer. That was all I needed to see. Like, I felt like that was the best trailer they've done for this game, but you're right. I mean, the lack of gameplay, definitely for anybody who isn't familiar with Fire Emblem, because I know I'm going to like the gameplay.
Right.
But
he was like, what is it? Like, is it action? Is it open world? Like, I don't even know what it is. And I was like, no, it's tactical. He's like, what? Like, how would you guess that?
Yeah.
Well, but either way, that's not an issue here or there. It's just something that my personal take on that. I will say the game that I'm excited about the most by far, aside from Breath of the Wild 2, is Link's Awakening. I love 2D Zeldas more than 3D. I already did that take. That's old news. But it just looks so cute, and I played it on the original Game Boy, and I'm familiar with the game, and I'm very excited to just have a fresh new take and a reimagining of 2D Zelda. I'll take that every console generation.
All right, well, actually, that's a perfect segue into our next segment, which is let's talk about the release dates that we got. And let's start off with Link's Awakening, because I'm not going to lie, when they revealed that game was coming out on September 20th, my real reaction was, whoa! Because I thought, if you recall a couple episodes ago, I thought this game was going to be the December release.
Yeah.
Because it was only revealed earlier this year, I think, like the March Direct, I think. And all I said was 2019. I'm like, oh, this will be the December release. This will be the big title that they go for Christmas because it's Zelda. And no, it's like a few months away. And I was like, oh, wow, that's huge.
How about when they just flashed very suddenly going through showing a clip reel of games and the release dates? Mario Maker's coming out. Mario Maker 2's coming out later this month.
Yeah.
Like, I totally forgot.
Yeah.
Like, between everything else, it's like, oh, yeah, a huge sequel to one of the greatest games on the Wii U is coming, like, very soon.
That just shows the content because, they took the time to at least show a little bit more of Pokemon, but they knew Mario Maker spoke for itself, and they had the Treehouse segment. And so between that and the Direct they had earlier in May, they didn't feel the need to remind you, oh, by the way, until that point, oh, yeah, hey, remember Mario Maker 2. So,
can I acknowledge one thing? Can we, as Nintendo fanboys, right here, right now, acknowledge one thing that is objectively bad about this Direct. Contra Rogue Corps. Is that a thing? Why? That looked like a 3DS or a DS game. It was super magnified, low res, and it was just like, what are we looking at? And my buddy was like, why would they do that? And I'm like, it's Konami, man. That's just what they do now.
Okay, now
like,
hold on. I do want to clear one thing up. They did not state this in the trailer, I don't think. This is not a Switch exclusive game, which I'm not saying like condones what they showed, but at the very least, this isn't like another, oh, we could just put it on a Switch because it has lower
graphics. It's just a lazy product in general.
It was. And I'm surprised. I won't lie. I was surprised. I mean, when they said Contra, I'm like, oh, okay. And then they did like the close-ups of the characters, and I'm like, why does it look so pixelated?
Didn't think it was a new game.
Yeah, it's a clear, it's like a very, like very clear, like, cash grab. We're trying to cash off the name of our IP that's recognizable.
That sounds familiar.
And get your money. And the only other thing that I thought was just creepy, and I was like, what was that, was the game The Dark Crystal Age of Resistance Tactics, which had this puppet kind of... And the thing that was the most confusing to me about all of that was they had a Netflix logo in the corner. And I'm like, is this a show? Is this on Netflix? Is the Switch getting the Netflix app? Is Netflix developing games? What is going on?
Yeah.
And that was just... I still don't have answers to that.
Okay, I can give you... Hold on. Take a breath.
Yeah, I'm just...
I'm gonna explain. Okay, The Dark Crystal was a cult classic movie from like the 80s, I think it was, and it's from Jim Henson's team, and there's supposed to be a prequel coming to Netflix, and this game ties into that, and it's a puppet movie.
Okay, so thank you.
You're welcome.
We can acknowledge them in the Direct truly had something for everybody.
There you go.
Because what demographic is that hitting?
We got to hit the 1980s Dark Crystal crowd.
The furries, man.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to it.
I thought that game looked decent. Like, the trailer was, like, I just thought the voice was weird, but now I know it's Jim Henson. I didn't know that. That puts it into more perspective.
Yeah.
I thought the game looked solid.
It's a solid RPG. It's solid, just, you know, not for everybody. Okay, let's get back to release dates, people, okay? Zelda was a big one. We already obviously knew about Pokemon. Then Animal Crossing.
Yes.
That one got delayed. It got delayed to March of 2020, which, let's
phenomenal
just say...
move.
Huh?
Phenomenal move. Remember, they always say like a game's delay is temporary, but being
bad
rushed
game is
and
forever.
Being bad is forever.
Yeah.
I mean, can't argue.
Yeah. No, you can't argue. And like they said, you know, they wanted to take a little extra time to make the game better. And I can't deny that if it looks good now, imagine what's going to look like or play like a little bit more. And as much as I still lament Fire Emblem not being in my hands right now, the trailer and the gameplay footage we saw during the treehouse made me understand, okay, yeah, if that's the polished end game version, I'll let them have those extra few months. So, and let's just be honest here, they've already kind of got a packed 2019, so if that's like the first or second big game of 2020, I'm okay with that. You know, that's a great way to start off 2020.
Yeah, so. No, I mean, I totally agree.
Yeah. So now the only thing I had a problem with in terms of release dates was Luigi's Mansion. This was
shocking that we didn't get a release date for that.
So the only thing I can think of, and obviously this wasn't confirmed, but you know, they're clearly in the end game stages because they were showing off a big couple of demos during the treehouse, and they clearly have a lot of things worked out. But it's weird that they're still saying 2019 and they're not having a release date yet. So maybe that'll be the December game. I don't know. It's going to be either October or December based on what we're hearing.
Yeah,
so.
It feels like it should be October. And maybe, I don't know, they have inside information on other big games getting released in October. I don't know what the other companies have scheduled, but maybe they're trying to drop Luigi's Mansion at a time where it can breathe.
Yeah.
That's my only thought. I was surprised that we didn't get a release date. That was concerning. Because the game did, as you said... it did look pretty done. I know it's hard to not get stuck on the games. We're going to dive into all of them.
We are.
A little bit,
we're almost there. We're almost there, Tyler. We're almost there. So, but yeah, I mean, release date wise, this was a good direct, and they gave us pretty much everything we needed outside of obviously like the DLC for Smash is summer and fall. That's necessary. So
Astral Chain is August 30th. I think we already knew that.
Yeah,
right?
We already knew that. Yes,
Astral Chain's August 30th. We
Deus
have
Ex
Ultimate.
Machina.
Yeah, Demon X
September 13th.
Yeah, so a week before Zelda.
Yeah, they're not doing that game any favors. With
no,
that.
They're not. Then, of course, we have Ultimate Alliance 3, which is a week before Fire Emblem. So, though, if we're being honest, at the very least, these are two, with Demon X Machina and Zelda, and then Ultimate Alliance and Fire Emblem. These are very different franchises appealing to very different people. So, it's not like there's a lot of crossover there.
Let's just acknowledge that how Nintendo has so many quality titles that they are actually struggling to find time to release them in an area where they can breathe. And because of the fact that now the company is not divided anymore, making and developing games for both portable and home consoles, we're finally now seeing the results. I think that's really cool.
Go ahead, Tyler, please.
Yeah, I was going to say, no, I agree. They didn't announce anything for the 3DS. Although they did say today that the 3DS is still an important device, which is interesting. Like, very clearly, it's no longer an important device. But
and
I
they said, like, a couple months ago, hey, we're not making any more first-party games for 3DS. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I thought that was odd that they would even feel the need to lie about it, because we all know that it's no longer an important device. But yeah, I mean, having all the development teams kind of hone in on one area is very exciting. It's definitely going to mean good things for 2020, especially because you'd figure a lot of the 3DS games, the final ones, wrapped up with, like, the Mario and Luigi Bowser's Inside Story team. Alpha Dream can now shift over and probably develop a Mario and Luigi game for Switch that would be in the range of next year or the year after that. So we'll
be seeing
the fruits of that soon.
Or, you know, heaven forbid we get a good Paper Mario game. I mean,
oh, no, that's, yeah, Paper Mario,
dare,
that's
dare
irrelevant.
Dare we dream?
And they're also rebranding. I liked how they rebranded and, like, reinvigorated Mario Party to Super Mario Party and said, this is the genre now, this is like the type of game we're making. And it looked like they're doing the same thing with Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games. Like, it's not
true.
And I was actually interested. I'm like, if this is a little bit of what they had from the last 3DS sports game and the last Mario and Sonic Olympic Games, and you have more quality gameplay and less of a shallow party experience, I might check it out. I mean, it's just nice to see that they're able to go one step deeper, because they really don't have that technology limitation that they sometimes do have.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so let's quickly go through what we have to look forward to for the rest of this year. So as Alex said over there, we have Super Mario Maker in the end of June. July will be punctuated by Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 and Fire Emblem Three Houses. August is going to be Astral Chain. Then September, we have Daemon X Machina and Link's Awakening, the remake. October, conveniently blank, but that could change. Pokemon is November. There was another game announced for November. What was it? They made a big deal about it. I can't remember what it was now.
Huh.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it wasn't like a big title, but they were making a big deal out of it. I don't remember what it was. I'm sure we'll find it. But anyway, there's another game outside of Pokemon. Though obviously Pokemon is the big deal. Pokemon's the big deal. And then December is currently blank. So we know we're going to have more Nintendo Directs. Luigi's Mansion is going to fill one of those 2 months, obviously October or December. So, but still, that's a lot. I'm going to be broke.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Like, I'm struggling already, and my finances this week has not been kind to me, but I don't care. I will find a way to get these games, because I just want them, especially Fire Emblem and Ultimate Alliance and everything. And so, we're going to be broke Nintendo fanboys.
Hey,
which reminds me, Tyler, you still owe me 20 bucks.
Yes.
Hey.
Yeah,
at least,
well,
like, you
broke too, so.
I know.
At least you guys are only focusing on Nintendo games. For me, I gotta worry about Alice games and Sony games as well. I mean, it's like, heck, I have a cat that's coming up in September. September.
Oh,
and all these other games as well. It's like, holy moly, I'm going to be broke. You're going to be broke. Please, I'm going to have to go buy all these things.
I just remembered, also in September, making the month even more packed, is Dragon Quest XI S, which is September 27th. So, yeah. Which is, of course, appropriate because of Smash Brothers. So, all right, let's talk games, shall we, gentlemen?
Oh, yes.
So, let's start with the big one, obviously Dark Crystal Tactics, Age of Resistance. Kidding. Let's start with Smash Brothers. So, I want to start, I know you guys want to talk Banjo-Kazooie, but I want to talk about the hero. All right, because we
start with the hero, that's fair.
We have been hearing for months now that there was going to be a Dragon Quest character, and everyone was going to say that it was the hero character from Dragon Quest III. He's like the most popular one and everything. And so sure enough, when we get that trailer and it's the guy from 11 who shows up, I was like, okay, that makes sense. They're about to bring him in via Dragon Quest 11S. We knew this was going to happen. This is unlike Joker, where his main game was not on the system. Calm me down. And then in true fashion, they pulled a feint on us and they revealed, oh, no. We're not bringing in one hero. We're bringing in four from the Dragon Quest lore, all of which who have been on the Nintendo platform, including Dragon Quest VIII, which was brought in on the 3DS, and you can shift between them via this character select screen, and each of them have their own powers. Like, that was really cool to me.
Wait.
Is that confirmed?
I don't think that's true.
No,
I don't,
Tyler,
think so.
I think that is true, because they show a list of the four moves first, and they select one. And then they show two other moves. One's like this reflecting sort
right.
of
right,
move.
Right, right.
And the next is Kamikaze, where it looks like it's like a big sudden death move. And those two moves are not within the other neutral B power moves.
So, like, I'm sure that the base moves, like
that's the
sword strike and everything, and the fire move, that's going to be basic to all of them. But then, like a Dragon Quest game, each of them are going to have their own little miniature special moves that
they're Echo Fighters.
So it's unclear if they're considered Echo Fighters and are under this, or if they're like different outfits. Because I think
I'm pretty sure it's outfits. They were looking at it like it's an outfit thing. Because if this was an Echo Fighter,
but then how would they have different moves? Like
I don't know.
Be...
I'm just going by what they show in the trailer, Tyler.
It's confusing. I totally get that.
Yeah.
Because it was confusing. I thought that special where they are like doing that, which was so cool, the animation where he's thinking like an RPG before he makes his move.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was going to be the neutral special, and then
maybe
you would pick one from there. But maybe it could be a Ryu thing where if you like hold down and B, you have a choice of four specials, and if you just click down and B, then you'll just
maybe
do one. Like Ryu has his light and heavy moves.
Yeah, I'm sure they're gonna clarify a little more, but
I'm gonna just go on the record. I don't think that they're all gonna be different. I think they'd be Echo Fighters if that was the case. That would be wild.
But that they were Echo Fighters, and that would make it a literal 4-in-1 character, you know? And
but
they had said
that they never mentioned that they wouldn't add Echo Fighters.
Yes,
they did.
They said specifically there would be no Echo Fighters in the DLC.
They said that Echo Fighters will not be a part of DLC. So
yeah.
I guess we're splitting hairs here.
Yeah.
Like, if you buy... Yeah, I don't know.
Because he would still be his own character. Like,
the
first one wouldn't be an Echo Fighter, but then if he had, like, seven or... Well, it would be four, because they have a different costume. Yeah,
That's what I'm saying. I think it's going to be like a costume change, and then each costume change for the first time has a really special set of RPG moves that they can use. Like, it's like there was Snooze, Caracal, Kamikaze, and all of them. So I don't know, but we're going to no doubt find out more. But I think this was a brilliant move because it adds a differentiation to yet another sword fighter.
Yeah.
Because that was obviously the big thing. It was like, okay, it's Dragon Quest. I heard someone call Dragon Quest niche. Dog, that game came out before Final Fantasy. Don't talk to me about
niche. Dragon Quest is niche in the West.
Yeah.
It was
not long
ago, but in the West it is.
Yeah.
So it's actually kind of poetic that the two characters announced in this were kind of nostalgic characters, one more so in the East, one so more in the West.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool regardless. But going back to what you said, Todd, about a variation on a sword fighter, every time there's a new Fire Emblem character historically, I was disappointed that it was yet another sword fighter for a long time. They were
Robin.
Right. And then Corrin. And it's now like its own. There's so many variations of sword characters that it kind of, at this point, I just like how unique the character is. Because at first glance, I was very concerned. I was like, all right, this is cool.
He looked like Robin, just not bad.
He looks like everything I want Robin to be. Because he's kind of like, he's kind of has the sword and shield and neutral game like Link, but his aerials are more like a traditional Fire Emblem character. Yeah. And he's got a special gimmick. So I'm in. I think it's going to be awesome regardless.
Yeah, I love that character. That trailer was the most viewed of any character reveal in Japan. So, like, that's just...
The people
in the West who were like, oh, that was awful. Like, those Dragon Quest is beloved there.
And what we should remember, too, I'll just say this really quickly, is that there has not been one DLC Smash character yet that upon release was a bad character. I'm not talking the best in the game or broken, but... Even if you don't have an inherent interest in the series or experience or knowledge, Cloud is an example for me, who's now one of my favorites. And it's the way these characters feel and how unique they are, that's what's truly exciting. I just love how they're totally not like regurgitating different gimmicks from different characters and making a random character. They truly are reinventing the wheel with each DLC character. I really feel like you are really getting your money's worth with each and every fighter they make.
I agree, which is only going to make it all the more intolerable for us to wait for the final two reveals.
How do they top it? I mean, how do they top Banjo-Kazooie?
They can't.
yes, they can.
Who?
You get the only two mascots they're missing in the history of video games that they do not have that are on the level of Mario and Sonic and Pac-Man. There's only two. 90s, PlayStation, Crash.
Yep.
Microsoft, the birth of Microsoft, who was their mascot? Master Chief.
That's never going to happen.
I'm not saying either of these things are going to happen.
I think Crash could happen.
I don't think either. If I had to bet money, I wouldn't think either of these things would happen.
Crash has been on Nintendo platforms before. He was in a handheld for the Game Boy,
released on the Insane Trilogy. Right?
Exactly. So that at least has precedence.
And Microsoft now has precedent. And I said this to a couple of my friends when they're like, wow, so this means no Minecraft Steve or no Master Chief. And I'm like, I don't think this does mean that. Because Microsoft has negotiated with their second party developer in Rare for this, but they did not have any of their own intellectual property represented yet. Don't you think they would have wanted to? Maybe that would have been part of the deal?
Hold on. Actually, I want to quote this guy directly. Microsoft released a statement about the Banjo-Kazooie release. And I'll paraphrase for now until I find the article, but basically he said, I know that you all are thinking that this was some high-level deal that I called the president of Nintendo, or he called me, and we made a deal and whatever, but that's not what happened. We merely made a deal based on what was wanted, and that was it. And so he basically said, you know, we're happy that Banjo-Kazooie is in the game, but it's not like that kind of thing. I know what site it's on.
I totally hear what you're... Was that Phil Spencer?
Yeah, it probably was Phil Spencer.
And look, even if that was true, like, if that wasn't true, he would say that anyway. I'm not going to be a conspiracy theorist. The moon's made of cheese. You know, 9/11 was an inside job. You know,
first of all, the moon is an egg.
So I'm not going to go that route, but it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, anything is possible now. Like, literally, they can do anything, and nothing would surprise me. And I don't think they're going to just peter out. I think it would be really disappointing to a lot of people if they just pumped out another new Pokemon or another new Fire Emblem character and said, well, the magic's over. But either way, my only two Smash ballot votes were King K and Banjo, so I am... Everything on top is gravy. I am so pleased.
All right, here we go.
Rare fans. in Smash Ultimate.
Okay, here, I got the quote. Okay, it was Phil Spencer. He says, the how is not actually that interesting. There wasn't any kind of CEO to CEO that had to happen. People have asked me on social media, I'm sure you've seen that over many years, would I like having Smash or having Banjo on Smash? And I've always been open to that. The licensing relationship between the two companies, they're there and they're kind of ongoing. The reason it's not something interesting, deep conversation, is because with us owning Rare and the history between those two things, there are a lot of conversations over the years about, hey, you want to do X, is that okay? I think it's kind of cool. Banjo is going to be in Smash. So there you go.
Let's talk about the Banjo trailer.
Yes.
Because it was brilliant. I mean, so much like with King K. Rool, you knew right away that it was Banjo when they started the rehash, when they had Mario and Bowser going at it. And I had to stop. I didn't care that my boss was staring right over my shoulder. I had to just max screen it because it was the best. And you got the same exact thing, but now King K. Rool sleeping in DK's hut, which I guess they're friends now, which was super well animated.
Loved it.
The troll with Duck Hunt, I just...
The dog
it could
is
have
still
been
mocking
cheesy.
Us. The dog
it could have been
is
cheesy.
Still mocking us.
Yeah, but it was just perfect. It was so funny. Only complaint is that Banjo jumped in instead of having Kazooie do the slam move in.
Ah.
But aside from that, it was great. And then I gotta tell you, I was tearing up when Donkey Kong, King K. Rool, and Diddy Kong were going nuts when
they
Banjo jumped in.
I loved it.
Yep.
I only caught that the second time because I was still getting over the Banjo announcement. But when I watched it again, I see them. Even K. Rool is cheering the Banjo because he was in Smash. I'm like, oh, they're happy too. They're like the fans.
That pretty much was the internet meme. Nintendo fans reacting to Banjo-Kazooie. Exactly showing that picture right then and there. And rewinding back a bit, the moment that Jiggy popped up on their floors, Rare. It's pretty much Rare show right now. Just that entire character cast: Donkey Kong from Rare, King K. Rool, Diddy Kong, and now Banjo-Kazooie. It's just and the way to say it, Rare to go. Clever wordplay.
Did you guys know right away? As soon as you saw, Treehouse, I knew right away.
Yeah.
I can honestly say I didn't, and for this solo reason, the beginning. Because the beginning was the exact same thing as the King K. Rool trailer. I was honestly panicking. I'm like, wait a minute, did they somehow make an error? And then I saw the shot with the Kongs fighting K. Rool. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, because they were setting it up. Because that was about the villains trailer. That was the final villain of sorts coming to the game. Although they could have had Medusa from Kid Icarus. Anyway, that was the villains trailer. And then all of a sudden, they show the King K. Rool, and I'm like, okay, then Donkey Kong yawns. I'm like, what is going on? Oh, look, there's King K. Rool. I didn't notice the Jiggy at first. I saw it bouncing, but I'm like, what is that? It's been ages since I played Banjo. And then I see the bird flying out, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Banjo-Kazooie. That was the moment for me.
Yeah, and I just really like how Duck Hunt Dog is just they had the same classic sound effect, just laughing. I was laughing my butt off on that thing because we were laughing regarding the King Dedede's fake out, and with Duck Hunt Dog, it's just the perfect character just to mock you. It's you're jabated, boy.
The dang dog is mocking us.
I couldn't have been more excited. Like I said, as soon as the first trailer happened with Smash, I was excited but somewhat disappointed because I really thought this was now or never for getting Banjo into the game. I really felt like if it wasn't going to happen now, it really wasn't ever going to happen. And so I just turned to my buddy that I was watching it with and I was like, maybe they do another one, one more thing, and then maybe it's Banjo. And then as soon as I saw that intro wheel, I just was locked in.
Yeah.
And I could not believe any of the rumors after the Grinch leak. Because there were a lot of leaks out there.
It's a good thing none of us believed the Grinch leak, right, Tyler?
Oh, I was so... I buttered you up for that too, Tyler. We were talking each other into that, weren't we?
Oh, no. I still believe the Grinch leak.
And you know
leak.
What?
I still
we can still
believe.
Dream. The Dreamers
Listen, they
won.
Need to go Geno and then acquire kids and we're good.
Just stop. Okay, keep going, Alex. Keep going.
No, I couldn't
I Banjo Kazooie to me, I wanted him in the game because that was my favorite 3D platformer, period. Like, we didn't have Mario 64 growing up. We just didn't. We had Banjo Kazooie. And I just used to play that game over and over again. And I don't know. It was sad to me, like, to watch that franchise die. And the whole genre of 3D platformers kind of died. So there's really, besides Yooka-Laylee, which just tried to, you know, there really is no representation from that whole era of games. And that wasn't just on the N64. That was also on the PlayStation 2 to some degree. So I really...
Yeah, I mean, Spyro disappeared, and that was kind of the PlayStation 3D platformer.
Right.
And they just went in a different direction with that franchise, too.
And there were some weird ones, like Gex and all the... Well, there's just been weird mascots and weird type of 3D platformers over the years. I don't know. I just really loved that there was representation, and that they had a great, just the perfect stage to do it. Like, they nailed it. Like, Nintendo oftentimes misses, and just to see them nail it on all levels, it just felt really, really good. Like, that was the most hype I've been. I was thinking it I was just totally popping off. I think the biggest pop off for me was Eagles winning the Super Bowl, then this, then the Phillies winning the World Series. So that tells you something.
Yeah. I had the guy who sits next to me at work has to think that I'm a psychopath, because I couldn't yell, but if I was home, I would have been glued.
Oh,
I was screaming. I just, but I couldn't. I had to keep it in, and I am horrible at that. So I just was scrunched up, trying not to show my face, because
it's screaming.
I was beaming. It was just they were so faithfully recreated. I loved the way they look. One, two, their moveset is so
perfect.
Faithful to Banjo Kazooie.
Yes.
They gave him the grenade eggs from Tui. It was phenomenal. And then his taunt, the hop. Ah, gosh.
The rhythm of the eggs coming out, which I think is going to be his neutral B special, where it's a couple and then it's continuous. Certain things they've done that are so true to his character that I couldn't believe. Like, they really just thought of the perfect way. And I have questions about his moveset as well. Like, I don't understand his up and his recovery, his up and B, if you have to be on the ground for that, or if it's kind of going to be Mega Man's or Sonic's.
I would think it would be more like that. I love that they had this jump in there, too, and the sound effect is ripped right from the game, and I just loved it. But yeah, I think that would probably be, unless that's I don't know, I guess that has to be what his up B was, and I'm sure
What was the name of the character who's his final smash?
That was the Ginginator.
Ginginator.
Oh, gosh. I saw a reaction video, and people were freaking out. They got a Ginginator as his final smash? So, I want to talk about really quick how I felt about the trailer. Not just that it was beautiful and they did a pun off the King K. Rool trailer, which is still in my top 5 all-time Smash Bros. Reveals, right behind Little Mac. But I found myself doing something I wasn't expecting. And it wasn't just smiling, because I was happy, and I knew Tyler would be happy despite all my ribbing of him, which he totally deserves. I am his friend, and I knew he wanted Banjo-Kazooie, so I was happy for him. But when the music kicked in,
yes,
the Spiral Mountain music, I started to clap. And not clapping applause. I was clapping in rhythm. I don't know why. I was just so happy, and the music was so catchy, and the trailer was so much fun. I was clapping along with it, just having fun, enjoying the fact that we finally got Banjo-Kazooie. And then, thanks to Will, I found out that the original composer of Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie, I forget his name,
Grant Kirkhope.
Yeah, him. He was called in by Nintendo to remake the Spiral Mountain theme song for that trailer and for the game.
And fun fact as well, because during the King K. Rool, they didn't call the original composer for Donkey Kong to make a remix.
Nope.
They specifically requested Grant Kirkhope for Banjo-Kazooie, the first Western composer to work on this game. So, fun fact.
Yeah. Yeah, that was just, it was cool. It was a big moment. It was a big moment for fans. It was a big moment for Nintendo. And now, of course, we are hearing rumors that there might be a new Banjo-Kazooie game in the works for Switch. Not confirmed by any means necessary, but it is.
It feels like it's something that's going to happen, especially Rare tweeted out afterwards that they hear our deafening response. Yes. And to me, that was an acknowledgement that, yeah, okay, we get just how much you guys want this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get too excited because, you know, anything could happen given that Rare is Microsoft at this point. Like, I could see the collab happening for sure.
Yeah. And like you who said, you know, they could do like a dual release, you know, one Switch and one on Microsoft. And I would actually be okay with that because Banjo-Kazooie is not like a lot of these other games where, you know, you need the graphical power. You know, it could, as long as it's on par with like Tropical Freeze, you know, which is absolutely gorgeous on the Wii U. And I think Tyler, you played it on the Switch and it was awesome. So, you know, have that level of graphical ability, mix it with a little Legend of Zelda style and open world or whatever, and you got a game that'll work on both platforms with minimal effort. So why not?
Yes.
I think after seeing the reaction, you have to think they're at least going to look into it if they haven't already. I mean, between the public outcry and then the numbers, they're going to get so much revenue and increases maybe for the Fighter Pass or just that character.
We could have said the same thing for Joker and Persona 5, but look what we got.
That game doesn't matter. This is Banjo and Kazooie.
I was kidding.
I just want to point this out. We're living in a timeline which Smash Bros. Is literally the avatar of the gaming industry. It unified all three companies.
It did.
It's literally the avatar of gaming.
It did. And it is. And it forever will be. And again, who the heck is in the final two slots? Who could possibly be there that could be more hype than Banjo and Joker and even the hero from Dragon Quest, which again is going to be huge in Japan? You know, who could they possibly get? I mean, we've always talked about Sora, and that's
not happening.
We also thought Banjo wasn't happening because of the Rare thing.
No, Joker?
Are you kidding me?
I thought Banjo was happening.
You're a Banjo fanboy nut, okay?
I am, but I didn't think he was coming to Smash 4 or to Brawl.
Fair enough.
I felt like it was happening. Okay. And Sora, I don't think so after Dragon Quest. That's the Square character to me. I don't think they're gonna do two
good point.
Square
good point.
Characters.
Square also is hard to do business with. Look at the amount of songs they gave Final Fantasy
two.
Both games, by the way. They had an opportunity to give more. They had to renew the agreement, and they said those two are still okay.
Yeah. and you know what the irony is? Konami, as big of jerks as they are, they gave like 1,000 Castlevania songs.
Yeah.
And two Castlevania characters. So, yeah. All right, guys, I know it's going to be hard.
It is.
We need to move on from Banjo.
We do.
Yeah.
Okay. Because we got a lot of games to talk about, and I want to start with, honestly, one of a surprisingly detailed Luigi's Mansion 3. We now know it's going to be called Luigi's Mansion 3, which is fine. It's a nice, simple name. And we now know that the third game is going to feature Luigi, Mario, Princess Peach, and the Toads, because you always need stools. And they get invited to a luxury hotel. What could possibly go wrong? And sure enough, Mario, Peach, and crew get kidnapped, and it's only up to Luigi, with the help of Professor Egad, to ascend, descend, go through dimensions, and teleport all throughout this hotel to get the ghosts, save his friends, and, you know, try not to get scared every 5 seconds. So I really like this one because, especially since they didn't give a release date, they went so in-depth in the trailer and the treehouse to show, hey, this isn't just something we don't have a release date on. We know what this game is like, and it is by far the most in-depth and detailed and, I would even go extravagant, Luigi's Mansion game ever.
Get used to hearing me say that I loved what I saw from this game, because I'm going to say it for every game that we're going to talk about. And I loved what I saw from Luigi's Mansion 3. They listened to feedback. They are not doing a level-based game like they did in Dark Moon. It's going to be a continuous thing with having different floors, with each floor having a boss. I could see it being a little bit more linear than the first Luigi's Mansion was. I will say that game is more linear than people remember it. Like, you really did have to do things in a certain order, and I'm not upset about this at all. I think the way they're doing each floor having its own theme is great. They looked creative. The ghosts have personality again, which that was my biggest complaint with Moon. I know they had like little gags, but they weren't as colorful as the original games were. And Luigi's Mansion 3 looks like it's going to amend that. They do have portrait ghosts again. And we saw in the treehouse a boss battle where Luigi is starring in a movie with a ghost like directing it. And instead of fighting the ghost, you have to like fight a giant monster that's basically Godzilla-ing the city. Yeah, and in the end, the ghost gives Luigi the elevator button as like a thank you for starring in his movie. Just such... Luigi's Mansion is a weird series, and they are really embracing that here. It's I'm so excited.
Yeah. Like, I gotta give props to the Treehouse where they're showing up that gameplay. Like, it was pretty much literally a Godzilla slash Dragon Ball moment right there. Like, try to go basically repel that fire blast from Godzilla, and they're like, okay, one person did enough, but then it gets doubles down, and you have to use that newest ability, Gooigi, which is basically your flubber double, and it's like, yeah, I have two Luigis going at him, like, share your energy with me, and just like going at that boss fight. That was an amazing demonstration they showed up there. And the fact that Gooigi can be played as a second partner for a co-op play, and they mentioned in the Scare Tower, like, it could be up to 8 players, either locally or in multiplayer, online multiplayer, that's pretty big. Pretty big, honestly. And I can only imagine, like, what kind of level does they gotta go with. Like, the fact that Gooigi can only go through spies, go through bars, like...
Not drains. Basically not drains, though.
Yeah,
fire and water is his weakness.
Yes,
I loved Gooigi stole the show for that game. I mean, I'm a big Gooigi fan now, so yeah. I haven't played Luigi's Mansion, any of them. I have them. I always told myself I'd play them, and I haven't. So this looks like another Luigi's Mansion.
Wait, you are twin brothers with Captain Toad Taylor.
Yeah,
biggest Luigi fan of all time.
Yes.
You've never played the first one?
It's strictly due to disrespect for Luigi. Only Luigi.
I respect that, yeah.
Because it's not a Mario game. So, you know, for those of you that don't know, Taylor is my twin brother. He is basically Luigi. I mean, he's tall and lanky, and I'm shorter and
scared
not
of everything?
Lanky. Sorry?
Scared of everything?
No. But you know what?
He's got a Captain Toad fearlessness to him.
Okay, so he's a fusion of Captain Toad and Luigi.
I would say that's accurate.
I would agree. That's a great assessment of character.
I'm the host.
But either way, I mean, I have nothing against this series. It's just one of those games I never got around to. You know what? That's not true. I didn't play the original GameCube one because I saw what it did to controllers. Because in order to catch Ghost, you had to spin...
Yeah.
The controller vigorously, and I was like, I'm not about... That's not fun to me.
I
know I played through Mario Party 1. you know? So, and then because of that, I have this weird thing that if I'm not going to jump in on the second one, I tell myself I will, but I didn't.
I played Dark Moon. I never beat it. I got bored. So, and I totally beat the first one.
And they're remaking the first one, correct?
No, they already did.
They did, and they released that for the
3DS.
3DS. So, I mean, I might pick that up and play it and see. I don't know. I think it's great that they brought it back. I'm happy it exists. And everyone that like internet personalities I follow say the gameplay feels so unique, and that it's definitely more gratifying and more unique than it was in the previous two. With the certain ways that the plunger can, you know, suck, and then just the different enemy kind
the
of
slam move.
Yeah,
like, that was a big problem in the first game. Would be a ghost would creep up on you while you were sucking another one, and you wouldn't be able to hit it. You just have to like hope that it missed. And now you kind of have a way to counter that by just swacking the other ghost on it.
Might I point out that thing would look so brutal on Luigi's part?
It does.
Like, okay, out of all the times you bullied me, now it's time I slam you down, slam you down, slam you down like a freaking rag doll. Like, holy moly, Luigi.
So, but yeah, I look forward to that one, and I'm glad they showcased it a lot in spite of not saying when it's coming out, but hopefully in the next month or so we'll get definitive details. So, moving on, I don't want to get to Fire Emblem just yet, because me and Tyler are going to talk about that forever, so I want to get to certain other games, including another one of my surprises of the con for me, Astral Chain. Because do recall, before this E3, we had one trailer for Astral Chain, and it was as anime as you can get. And so we were like thinking, oh, it's another one of those super over-the-top Platinum Games titles, you know, just in a big city and everything like that. And then the trailer and the tree houses came around, and there was two Astral Chain tree houses, which I really enjoyed. And it's so much more in-depth than I could ever have pictured, because you actually have to do police work. It's not all about being in, you know, this anime-style storyline.
Yep.
Yeah,
Well,
those
it seems like it would be one of your Game of the Year candidates. You should speak on it.
You never know.
Well, it pretty much is. I mean, as you know, it's made from Platinum Games, and Platinum Games, they rarely screw up, honestly.
Rarely,
and actually, on social media, they actually showed up a bit, like, three details you may not know about Astral Chain. In regards to combat, it is pretty much in between Bayonetta and Nier Automata. So, like, think of it as the combat in between those two games. Second is,
you can tag with multiple characters at once.
Well, yeah, I think that was one of the,
trust me, I watched the video, I know what it was.
Yeah, and the third detail is there's gonna be cats. There's gonna be a lot of cats. So if you're a cat lover, buy this game. But I digress. But
this is
yeah.
the game with the little children I see at airports with leashes on them. Like where you have like this kind of persona that they have in chains that they
Close.
Send out.
Well, you're JoJo if you want to.
So this was my first time seeing this game, and it looked really cool. I want to know how it feels.
Yeah.
It looked smooth to me. Like,
it did.
I was not into this game originally, and I was sold on it here. The combat did, Platinum knows they made the game, obviously. It did look a lot like Bayonetta to me. But perhaps even crisper. Like, just everything looked so sharp, and the combat looked super fun.
Yeah.
The speed, it looked like there was a high kind of skill cap.
Yeah, there is,
there's a lot
of tactical gameplay. There are the things you actually chain up are called legionnaires or legions, and you have five different types. You have sword, axe, bow, puncher, and like a beast that you can ride, literally.
Yes.
And like when they had the head guy do a boss fight, and he's doing like super combo moves that even the Nintendo guys are like in awe of. So you're gonna want to train, and then you can like wrap them up in the chain to tie them down. You can actually bind humans in it too. There was like a side quest, but there's just it honestly reminds me of Xenoblade Chronicles X because you're in this living city where you can interact with just about everyone, and you get side quests and side missions, and they can help you get back to your main quest. There's just so much depth in it, and it was so much more. Like you talked about the Fire Emblem trailer being incoherent. That's how I felt about Astral Chain at first, because I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like just so anime. And then
dialogue, like, what are they talking about? Like,
exactly.
I have no
and we still
idea.
Don't know. All we know is that this version of Earth has been invaded by interdimensional creatures, and it's up to you as a member of Neuron, which is totally anime name, to find these gates, shut them down, and then find the source of them and defeat them before more and more humans get pulled into this other dimension. Because, of course, the other dimension is trying to kidnap all the humans it can, because it wouldn't be anime if it wasn't. So, yeah, but this game, like, if you haven't seen the tree houses of them, go into it, and it'll take, like an hour between the two. It's so good, and I totally get in this game.
It demoed really, really well.
I am very skeptical, though, and the only reason I say that is because Platinum Games had a lot of early success, and then they got really big really fast and got spread way too thin, and we ended up seeing whatever Star Fox Zero was. And on a personal note, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle game they made was hot garbage.
Well, and they also made a Legend of Korra game, which wasn't the best. But
So I know that this is kind of like Nintendo's Platinum Games right now, which is the Platinum Games that's working on Bayonetta 3,
yeah.
which is They're A team, so I'm hoping that, you know, it is the quality, but I don't trust them like I once did now. So I'm going to wait on it. It's not a day one purchase for me. I'm going to wait on it.
Well, for me, because again, if you remember from the first from the review trailer as well, because like one, it is also being directed like from the one who also did Nier Automata, and Nier Automata was a great game. And then of course what was it? Hideki Kamiya is actually going to be also supervising this game as well. And Hideki Kamiya is again Beautiful Joe, Okami, and all that. And of course we're going to there is a lot of like big names of Platinum Games that are going to be supervising this project, which I feel like, yeah, I personally am not gonna feel that worried, because again, while they did have some missteps like with the Core or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles games, like I feel like they are fast learners, I feel like, so they know like what, and I feel like this project has been in development for quite some time to warrant like probably this quick release date. So like for me, Astral Chain just really seems like they know what they're doing. And Platinum Games, I definitely trust.
So again, look at the tree houses. It's really good stuff, and yeah, I think you'll be happy. Unlike Animal Crossing fans are right now, because even though the trailer for Animal Crossing New Horizons was actually very in depth, and again, they also did a tree. It was actually the first treehouse segment they did, I believe, was Animal Crossing. You know, even though it's good, it looks solid Animal Crossing, and our dear friend Kromcho is excited. It is delayed until March 2020, which is going to be apparently one of the busiest months of gaming in history between Animal Crossing and
Final Fantasy.
And there was another game I think was released in March, but we'll see.
Cyberpunk, I believe.
So yeah, Cyberpunk. There you go. So yeah, if you think about it, that's actually three very different kinds of RPGs. So
yeah.
So it's like, do you want cute? Do you want cute waifus, or do you want Keanu? I'm just saying you're breathtaking anyway. But yes, Animal Crossing New Horizons, I mean, I'll be honest, this isn't my forte. I'm not an Animal Crossing fan. I have nothing against the franchise, it's just not my kind of game. But I was a little sad to see that it wasn't coming out 2019, but again, it's gonna be a headliner for 2020 for sure. And the desert island aesthetic, that's new, that's exciting.
Deserted island.
What did I say?
You said desert island.
I apologize.
Might as well be a desert island.
It might as well be
deserted. There's no one there.
Depends where you are on the island.
It is Tom Nook. Okay. Let's not forget, it is Tom Nook, who apparently has his own company now, and is charging you 48,000 leaves just to get put on an island to build up. So it's like, the guy's clearly a monster. Okay. I saw an article about how Tom Nook is the biggest villain in video games. I didn't understand that until I saw the Animal Crossing New Horizons trailer. I'm like,
well, yeah, like, what? Because Tanook, the Tanuki, that's what he's based on. Like, he pretty much is just that, a Tanuki. He will lie, cheat, and, like, what is the biggest thing in reality, in real life, which affects us all human beings?
Money.
Mortgage and debt.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what Tanuki is. Like, okay, after all the service, with including your smartphone and travel fees, you owe me roughly about 50,000 bells. It's like, jeez, how real life can you be in this game?
Pretty much.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think Animal Crossing is any of our fortes.
Speak for yourself, I actually played the first game, so yeah.
Okay, well, so, I mean, you played the first one. Did you play New Leaf?
Dabble a little bit, but actually.
Okay, well, then it's none of our fortes.
Yeah. Now,
I understand the first game, so I can understand the formula.
Yeah, I played New Leaf, so I mean, I understand. I didn't like New Leaf. I played it for a month and I had fun for the first 2 weeks, and I didn't have $60 or $40 worth of fun. Yeah. It's just not my. It's not my type of game, but I really had trouble getting into. Like, I'm not a big aesthetic guy. Like, I know a ton of people who love Animal Crossing.
Kromcho,
they build these beautiful towns, and I think that that's phenomenal. And for those people, I think it's hard not to be excited about this. The animations were great. Visuals looked great.
Yes, yes.
And I don't know if you guys watched the treehouse, but they confirmed that you can have up to 8 players on one island building it up together.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, that's really, really cool. There's a lot of good stuff in here. I don't think that I'm going to give Animal Crossing another chance. I just don't think it's for me. Yeah. But well, I was impressed.
Yes.
Yeah, personally, because when I first saw the trailer of Animal Crossing, it's like, for you, instead, first it was like your own first little town. Then the second game is basically you are the mayor of the town. Now you're pretty much going to be the mayor of this island, per se. Like, you create your own camp. There's a lot of customization, which I feel like they definitely took a lot of elements from Minecraft. You can now create your stuff instead of buying it, because, again, you're living on a deserted island. So, like, the crafting, you could literally, like, shovel up trees into the palm of your hands and just, like, create your own little campground, like what they did in the mobile game of Happy Camp. Yeah, I forgot the name.
Pocket Camp.
Pocket Camp.
I bought Animal Crossing Wish Your Forte, Will.
Yeah, well.
I have some senior moments, so forgive me.
I played the 2001 classic.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's... So, I mean, for me, like, it pretty much reminded me why I enjoyed the first game in the first place, because, like, you just, it's, like, pretty much your second life, as we mentioned in previous podcasts, that you are on the desert and you can do whatever you want. You can go fishing, you can go that, and the only thing you really have to worry about is paying off your debt to Tom Nook, which, like, that's pretty much the most realistic thing could be. Like, it is, like, this is your vacation. You're on a desert island, you can have, like, you can now pave your roads, is, like... There's a lot of customization to this, and like the fact that you can invest time in your life to like just basically get that escapism that we love in video games, and for this case Animal Crossing, is like that's kind of the main appeal why a lot of people love this game. It's like that escapism just to be on an island, be a mayor, like that make your own clothes or own tools. That's one thing a lot of people like about Animal Crossing.
Yeah, our dear friend Cromcho is a major Animal Crossing fan, and she couldn't watch the direct because of her job, and so when I wrote the article about Animal Crossing, I put the trailer, and I made sure to show it to her, and she goes, yeah, I'm sad that it's delayed to 2020, but it looks so good, I'll wait. So, very kind and patient Animal Crossing fans. So...
Yeah, I mean, I personally couldn't care less.
Yeah.
about it's just not the type of game I play. I grew up playing The Sims a little bit, and it was fun. But overall, it's not games without a definitive end that I could say, like, I've completed this game or I'm done with this game. You know, I only have time for one of those in my life. Smash is one that, like, it's just something I always go to. This game, I don't see myself ever playing it. But I like everything you guys said, it looks great. I know people that are buying systems just for this game. So the fans clearly are there and are dying to see it, so I'm excited for them. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
There's nothing wrong with that, my friend. Mm-hmm. So, all right, let's get to the two big games.
Get into Fire Emblem right now.
Okay,
I'll start.
Yes,
I'll
please,
start.
Please.
This, I mean, I was so nervous. I mean, Heroes, I had started to sour on it, and I thought that Intelligent Systems lost their touch. I thought that Intelligent Systems had just forgotten what makes a Fire Emblem game great. And then I saw the trailer and I saw the treehouse, and I am to the moon excited about this. I mean, this, I've never been this excited for a Fire Emblem game, and I was crazy over Fates. I just, where to begin? So first of all, my biggest concern, as you know, as a hardcore fan, I'm not a filthy casual like Will, was the fact that the Garrick Mach Monastery was going to take up be the main focus of the game, was going to be tutoring your students and the relationships of high school drama. And I just, that would have been awful. And I was really afraid that they were going to go in that direction. But come to find in that story trailer, the game is broken up into two acts. One part where your army is students.
Yes.
And then a second act where 5 years in the future, after they've graduated, where it's an all-out war between the continents. And seeing the way these characters have changed, I need to apologize to Will, because he was right. I said Edelgard's design looked bland. Her 5 years in the future design is fire. It is. She looked amazing, like a true war general.
Basically, she's Princess Amidala for what the internet says about her, yet the design of her.
She looked like she could kick some ass. I was very excited about that. Dimitri, I thought was the worst of all of them. And
really?
I'm going with the Blue Lions. I am going with Dimitri. He changed from him being this holy-looking dude to just this broken, angry, just pissed off.
Honestly, he reminds me of like an edgelord recruit, honestly. He just became an edgelord during that time skip.
But he's from like the church area, so I have a personal struggle with religion. Like, I feel like his character is going to be really interesting, and of course Claude looked great as well. That 5-year jump is when the game kind of transitions back into a traditional hardcore Fire Emblem game. Yeah, and even at the Treehouse, we saw stuff from the first act, and that too looked like just unbelievable Fire Emblem goodness. They brought back dismounting from the old, the third game. Like in those games, your Pegasus Knights couldn't be mounted indoors, so they would become grounded units. Now you can get off your horse. You can have the giant boss lion that took up 4 squares and just looked like a behemoth to defeat. Paralogue, you can recruit characters from other from classes you don't choose into your class. The replayability, 3 separate playthroughs. Oh my goodness! Somebody else speak, because
I will take over for you, dear Tyler. I want to share with you my morning leading up to E3 and the Treehouse. So.
Probably.
It's not that bad, but you know what's coming. So, you know, woke up, had my peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It was good. And I was preparing for a meeting that was going to end right before the press conference, right? So that didn't happen. So I'm trying to find a way to stall for like an hour. And I realized, oh, the Fire Emblem Heroes new banner is here. And I've got like 300 orbs. So naturally, I go and dive myself into that, start a nice summoning session. I spent 160 orbs and got nothing but a 5-star Carla, who should not have been 5-star, and a 5-star flying Hinoka. So I was very, very angry at Fire Emblem, because I'm like, this is why I hated Heroes, because it's crap like this that would happen. Anyway, so I get the trailer, and I like the idea of the 5-year time jump, but then I saw the Treehouse session, which was headlined by my future wife, Audrey. And
didn't we say she was my?
It was like you complained
that
about
was
that last
year.
Time. Yeah.
All right, I've moved on. Audrey's my future wife. All right, and she led it, and she was a clear Fire Emblem fan. She was talking about the classroom elements. She was talking about the mini side quests and events, and the depth, the detail. We were worried. We were honestly worried, especially a certain Tyler over there was worried about like the school setting and how that would all play out and everything. But this looks so interesting, not just because we are now influencing these students and these relationships for 5 years in the future, but all the depth that they're putting into it. Like there was a counselor where these students would anonymously, you could notice their silhouettes, but anonymously ask the teacher for help, and you have to pick your answer based on how you feel that character would respond, and your response will influence their confidence, their motivation, and their stats. And then there's the whole, like, the teacher or the student could come to the teacher and go, "Teacher, I don't think I meant to be a cavalier. I think I'm actually better with the bow." And you can choose to say, "You know what? You're right, and I'll have you train as a bowman." Or you can say, "Screw you. I'm the teacher, and you're going to be a cavalier," which is what Audrey did with some of her units because she needed more cavaliers. And so you truly get to be a teacher and where you can guide the students. Some of them react certain ways. Like she was helping one student and he doesn't react well to criticism, so she went like a softer touch and he responded to that. And that's really cool. Every single character truly has a personality, which is exactly what Fire Emblem is all about, but now we could experience it more. The support conversations actually feel easier to get because you're working with these students. And then when you get to the 5-year time jump, those relationships will be even more pronounced. And it's been confirmed in the 5-year time, after the 5-year time jump, you will be able to get into a relationship with certain characters. Children are not confirmed as of yet, but based
they're
on not,
they're deconfirmed. Children are deconfirmed.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, that was a huge burden for me in my Fire Emblem Awakening walkthrough. And this is more of a general question. Why do some? I know you like the characters, and I get that, and I get the story, and I get the gameplay. It's addictive, and I like it. But to put in the effort that I did with Heroes, where I'm developing the best possible teams, best possible combinations, to fight against the meta game of the players I'm playing against and their units. Did you guys do you actively play online? Is that something you, Tyler, is that what differentiates you in your eyes from being like a filthy casual player? Where, because I, for me, I'm playing through the story game. I'm grinding out. I'm looking up what marriages are canon, what kids would be best with which people, what skills are the best to inherit. And I'm like, why am I doing this? Other than I like the game and I'm willing to pour myself into it to see if I like the series. It's like, what is the end game here? This isn't like, once you're done the last chapter, it's
you're
done.
You too much,
so
man.
In Fates, there was a multiplayer component. I don't play in the multiplayer component. Mm-mm. I never in Awakening was about optimizing my kids. I would just, like, whoever could get Gale Force, I would make sure to pass that down because Gale Force is broken. But, and on Lunatic, I don't know what mode you're playing on Lunatic, you have to have Lunatic, it matters. On the Lunatic playthrough, you have to have smart planning on what skills you pass down.
Yeah,
because
I did
children units are amazing. And
yes, I did do Classic because I wanted to have the genuine experience, but I did the standard difficulty.
Yeah,
I don't know,
yeah.
Whatever.
So, I mean, at that point, it really is just what characters you like and stuff like that. So that doesn't really matter. When I say filthy casual, I'm referring to the people who play the game just for Camilla's design.
Yeah.
And like that's a sect of the Fire Emblem community that really grew in Awakening, where the marriage system worked great and it played into the plot perfectly
in Awakening.
In Awakening, come Fates, the intelligence systems was like, well, this worked. We better shoehorn it back in. And
we need
just
more
didn't.
Children.
Yeah, and it just didn't work. And there's people who were like defend that decision because they like the idea of waifus and stuff like that. And that's not why I play.
And
Fire
I was blown away at Awakening how, like, not bad it looked, but it really looked like Heroes. Like, it really did. And they had, like, it was, I turned battle animations off and I just played it, and I love it. Like, it's very addictive gameplay, and it's very unique. But I, gonna be honest, I don't care about the story. I care about the character development, but like the lore within some of the story, yeah. I'm kind of whatever, man. You know, it's like this gameplay.
Fire Emblem stories are not great. Like, they've never, like, some of them are good.
Watch it.
Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn are phenomenal stories. Fire Emblem 7 is a good story, but the other ones are limited. They have some good characters.
Like, the series is tongue in cheek, and that makes it very charming. Yeah. And but then when you try and do that, and then at the same token are trying to take yourself serious, and then at another token are appealing to an anime vibe. I'm not saying that begrudgingly. I'm just saying, like, they're doing all of these things, and it's great, but it didn't mesh coherently like I thought it would. And so I was very reassured by watching the gameplay of this of Three Houses, how modern it looked and how it still retained the, like, top-down board perspective, but in the 3D component. There was, like, very little imagination. It was, like, kind of what I've seen Pokemon transition to. I really liked it, and I was reassured because I was worried that this game gave me some weird, like, Hogwarts type of Hogwarts meets Persona kind of, and I was like, I'm not into this life simulator thing, and I want to like this.
Yeah, and they made sure to say, they made sure to say in the treehouse that should you not want to delve as deep, can skip a lot of the school elements and let the computer, quote unquote, decide for you what the characters will be. That way you can go straight to the battles. Now, I will be doing that because I want to experience this greatness, but for someone like what you said, Andros, you know, who wants more of the battlefield more versus a Hogwarts feel, they have that option for you. So they are truly trying to appeal to everyone with this game.
Yeah, I watched the Treehouse, and he really did a great job reassuring everyone that this they have what you want. It's for you to do it, but it's very clear. It's here. And I guess my last question to you guys, because I don't want to harp on this, but it's really kind of interesting to see. Like, I don't really know how this game is delineating from those before it. Like, I don't. So
I can
it's
tell
like
you.
It's kind of. I mean, you could do a brief overview, but it's more so, you know, when you have these type of games, do you buy the DLC? Because this is a game that's definitely going to have DLC. And are those just more maps like they were with Heroes? And once there are more maps, do you just play them once and that's it? That doesn't
Awakening
seem worth money.
Awakening and Fates' DLC was character-driven for the most part. There was – the best one was Future Past – and that was an alternate story. It was three maps, and it took place in like a timeline where the parents are dead, and there's like all hope is lost, and you have to, or like Crom's crew from your game comes in and tries to save that timeline. That was very cool. That was a story-driven DLC with all new maps. Fates went a different route. They had DLC where your units had pre-picked stats. For some of them, not all of them, but some of them you had predetermined stats and you had to figure out the puzzle. That one was a similar like alternate timeline DLC. And then there's just the basic grind money and then there was like a go back in time and meet Marth in Awakening. So
cameo maps. So, you know, there's going to be DLC, I'm sure, because this game is just too grand, but the game itself is going to be very different, I feel, because of the 5-year time jump. Not even Path of Radiance or Radiant Dawn did anything like that. And those were some of the grandest stories of Fire Emblem history. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. And I'm excited. Tyler's lit.
We'll talk a ton more about this later, but just really, really quick.
Hey, you're going to let me have my opinion?
No.
Because you two have.
No, yeah, I just wanted to answer Alex's question about why it's different. There's a ton of gameplay stuff that they've shaken up and that they've brought back from old games that have long been gone.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
All right. And hurry up, yeah, just to make it cool. Because you two were hogging it. So,
it's our game.
For me, like, yes, it's your game. And I'm a 50 casual. Sorry.
Yes, you are.
For me, like, I want to see three houses. It's precisely as that, like, because, like, regarding to the whole school's part. Aspect is pretty much like I'm not sure. I thought you guys played it, but basically it reminded me of the idol simulator games. Basically, like you raise up your stuff of your students, your idols. It's pretty much similar to that. Like you, as I said, raise up. You want to be a cavalier, knight, heavy knight. Like you basically focus on their stats. And of course, like there's also a nice little detail as well. Is like you could also like interact with your students or even one of the other staff members as well. Like during like a lunch meal, which is like kind of a funny little thing. Like a really nice touch that I appreciate. And also confirmed during that treehouse as well, it is confirmed there's going to be dual voicing as well. So if you like your English dub or Japanese dub, there's also there as well. So that's one that I enjoyed.
And also further confirmed was all voice acting, which is what we were praying for. So
yes, all combos has voice acting, which is like really surprising, which I'm very happy about. And yeah, just like the fights themselves, like especially when they fight against that giant wolf, is like woo, like I can really see why people love the Fire Emblem, like old classic Fire Emblem, even back during like the time of Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn. Like it's really like this is basically a return form back to those classic games. Like for those who didn't have that fortune to play like Path of Radiance back in the GameCube era, this is probably the best time to like really jump back into it. And yeah, from that school act during and to that 5-year time skip is like that's gonna be one thing that's gonna probably gonna drive home to you. Like you don't want to see these kids die because they're pretty much your students, but of course conflicts of war, like who are you gonna choose? Like if the, and of course naturally it's gonna be the middle path, of course. So I wonder. So for me, I really can't wait for myself as well.
So like I said, that's coming out July 26th. So stay tuned for that. And of course, we're going to be talking about it more as the weeks slowly, slowly tick down. So we had Fire Emblem. We had Luigi's Mansion. Animal Crossing's coming in 2020. We had the Hero and Banjo. Oh, wait, that's not how they're ending the Nintendo Direct? Oh, they're teasing a new game. Oh, it looks like Zelda. But wait a minute. They said that there wasn't any more Zelda DLC. Oh, it's a Breath of the Wild sequel! Oh my gosh! That was literally pretty much my reaction. Like, I wait a minute. They said there wasn't any more DLC, and it's just evolving. And then I know Zelda's new haircut, which of course the internet's going wild over. And then we see the dead person, and then the cave-in apparently, and a Breath of the Wild sequel is now in development. Okay.
Yeah, I was pretty much screaming as well during the presentation. It's similar to that it's wow. Like we like as. The consensus basically is like we knew that they're gonna make the other next game sometime down the line, but to finally have confirmation on it, like that was like holy moly, is like that was just big excitement right then and there. Like the fact it's gonna be a direct sequel to Breath of the Wild, and it's pretty much like very Majora's Mask aura mood, like, and the fact that we're probably looking at Ganondorf's court then and there, like, since we faced off against Calamity Ganon, like it seems we're gonna finally meet the big man himself again.
Hopefully. Andros, how about you? What'd you think of the teaser?
I was very excited. I don't think that they owed more than that teaser. I think that
I agree.
The development is definitely, they got to be just starting it. Or you know, the framework is there. They've put in all the dirty work in developing that environment. I want to see what they do to the world, whatever the story takes it. Just to make it feel a little bit more alive. I wasn't upset that there weren't true dungeons and that there were shrines and that they were puzzles, but it did look a little generic. The open world, although it had a lot of things and everything could interact with each other, I felt like a lot of times it was a little barren. And although it was beautiful, I would like to see them now take what they have and make it just vastly different. And so I'm just more intrigued. It's I you know, completed that game and the both DLCs, and I couldn't be more excited to play a second one in the near future. You would think within the next 2 to 3 years.
Tyler?
Yeah, I'm expecting it a little bit sooner than most people. I think that it's going to be next year.
I don't know.
And that's because, and we've said this on NEP multiple times. We figured it would be a Majora's Mask type thing. When you make a game as big as Breath of the Wild, you cut a lot of stuff. True. I mean, I'm sure that they have games worth of stuff that they cut. So I expect that they
Aliens.
Have a lot of the assets already prepared. Clearly, it's the same graphic. Zelda has a new model, but I think Link's model looked the same.
It is.
Yeah, so it depends also on where we're going to go. We saw that castle rate looked like it was about to Paper Mario style rise up to the sky. So we'll see what they decide to do with the setting. That changes the development time as well. I hope we go somewhere new. But yeah, I think that we're going to get this game sooner than people think. I think it's going to be the big game next year, releasing either in March of 2021 or of holiday next year. And yeah, it looks great. I mean, the Majora's Mask darkness, I'm very much into. The world of Breath of the Wild was super dark as is underneath the kind of gorgeous exterior. I'm here for a Zelda horror style game that's just creepy and dark and thoughtful. Yep. It's been a while since we've had a Zelda story like that, I would say, since Majora's Mask. I mean, we've had Zelda games.
Twilight Princess
was dark.
Yeah. But either way, I mean, it's still not the norm for them to show an intro to a Zelda and present it quite like that.
Yeah.
I mean, they clearly have a vibe.
So Aonuma did a small interview after the thing and during the tree. I think one of the Treehouse segments. First and foremost, this game is not connected to Majora's Mask, which is a little disappointing for me, because if you recall, I said in one of our podcasts that I wanted to go back to Termina, like a new version of Termina. So, but I guess we'll just have to wait on that. But it will have, you know, a darker, deeper theme. Like they said that Aonuma said he wanted to keep the world, but expand upon it and delve more into its story, which obviously was one of the small criticisms about Breath of the Wild as well. While the world was a story, the world didn't have too much of a story outside of the main one, and you could do whatever you want in the meantime. So they're going to dive deeper into the story. It's going to be darker. And obviously that enemy, the skull person, whatever, you know, it's a sign of things to come. And I look forward to seeing how Breath of the Wild has evolved, because it was such a great game, so detailed, the perfect way to kick off the Switch era. And now we have a direct sequel, which I honestly didn't know if they would be bold enough to do, but they were. So I look forward to seeing, like you said, Tyler, they cut out a lot of things. Like, the original concept for Breath of the Wild had Link versus aliens.
And
so,
and I think they're
going
to try to continue with that.
Yeah.
I think they're going to try to continue with that, honestly, it feels
never
like.
Never know. Remember, there were aliens in Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
All right. So, I just think this was, if you had asked me one thing I didn't expect to see, a couple things I didn't expect to see, I would have put Metroid Prime 4, unless they had a super small intro of just showing off Samus in the Switch engine, and then the next Zelda game, because we just found out a few months ago that they were definitively working on the content or the beginning of the next Zelda game, whatever that was. That's all we knew. We didn't know it was Breath of the Wild sequel, which is awesome. So
in probably next week, we should really jump into what we expect from this game.
Sure.
And just kind of totally break it down and go all out.
Sure.
But,
why not? I like that.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, but I'm excited for this. I think this was, you know, Tyler mentioned it, that he didn't think there were going to be a lot of big future announcements, and sure enough, we didn't have that outside of obviously No More Heroes 3 and Animal Crossing.
Huge.
And...
Huge.
What?
New announcements, like Breath of the Wild, like just that enough is huge.
Yeah, it's huge. So now, yeah, and so I was teasing a lot of other people, because I'm like, hey, Nintendo won E3, and they go, well, what about Square Enix? I'm like, you do realize Square Enix had most of its big games in 2020, right? or Xbox or Ubisoft. Okay, Ubisoft, I guess, had a few that were coming out this year. But and then Sony wasn't even there. So yeah, Nintendo wins. Nintendo wins.
That was our poll question, by the way, last week.
88%
said yes, Nintendo will win E3.
There you
and,
go.
Yeah, I would say they were right.
I said no. And
oh,
I'm
shut
eating
up.
Crow.
Yes, you mean,
I think they did win. I think they did win. But I'm just saying, for the record, yeah. I voted that I didn't think they would.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been a down year, but
I mean, to be fair as well, you got to give props to Xbox press conference for going to Phantasy Star Online too. Honestly,
no,
you got to give props to that.
I do not have to give him props for that. I don't have to give him props for anything. Not a dang thing, Will. Except for giving us Banjo-Kazooie, but that wasn't in their press conference, was it? No.
Before we wrap it up, everybody, your number one announcement, most excited announcement, and your overall grade.
Fire Emblem Three Houses, A.
No Heroes 3.
Grade? Well.
A plus.
Ooh, A plus. Yeah. Wow.
Banjo, A.
Tyler?
Yeah, I got to go Fire Emblem Three Houses. But you know, yeah, it's so tough.
Put Fire Emblem for Banjo
I'm going Banjo and A.
All right.
You know what? I changed mine to Kazooie. Anyway. Because we need equal representation.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, before this get devolves any further, we're going to end this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Now, I would call out for Tyler, but he's already revealed the poll question. So, we are going to go to the next poll question, which is, which 2019 Nintendo Switch game are you now the most hyped for after E3? A, Luigi's Mansion 3. B, Fire Emblem Three Houses. C, Link's Awakening. D, Pokemon Sword and Shield, which we honestly barely talked about this podcast.
Yeah.
So thank you, Nintendo, for doing that last Nintendo Direct. So yeah, so of those four games coming out this year, you hear that, other companies? This year, not next year. Not random release dates next year, this year. Right here, 2019. You know, that's our year.
Our new console's coming out, and here's no information about it.
Pretty much. So... Luigi's Mansion 3, Fire Emblem Three Houses, Link's Awakening, or Pokemon Sword and Shield. Which one are you looking most forward to after E3? Do let us know. And of course, let us know what you thought about E3 as a whole. What was your favorite announcement? Were you super hyped about the Hero and Banjo-Kazooie being put into Smash Brothers? And if you didn't, you don't have a soul. Okay? And what did you think about Animal Crossing being delayed and the Breath of the Wild 2 teaser? Let us know, and we'll talk more next week. And hopefully we'll have our special co-host that didn't get to be here tonight here next week, so she can reveal everything she thought about E3. So, for Tellius Tyler, Andros Alex, Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd, ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level and E3 2019. Raise the flag.